Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. We start with the good, which leads into a really, really bad one. So let's just jump right to it. This is courtesy of the Weekly Standard, but the poll is from NBC News and the Wall Street Journal. Shows that nearly half of Americans oppose President Obama's forthcoming executive action on immigration, and only a plurality of Latinos even support the measure. The poll found 48% of Americans oppose the executive action, the details of which the president is expected to announce tonight, while just 37% support it and 14% say they are unsure or have no opinion. 63% of Democrats support it, while 11% of Republicans and 37% of independents agree. Just 43% of Latinos say they agree with the measure, with 37% opposed. So, Jim, the good news is that the American people are reading this right pretty much like they did 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, this is not popular legislation. Freudian slip there, Greg, because it should be done through legislation, but now we're going to do it through the magic executive order. Greg, if this was popular, Obama would have done this before the election, now wouldn't he? So he knows this is phenomenally unpopular. When La Raza and other activists were giving him grief about, you know, why he didn't do this in the previous years, he kept insisting, I don't have the authority, it's not the Constitution, I am not an emperor, I am not a monarch. The only thing that's changed is that the election passed. And we are now about as far as we're possibly going to get from a federal election in 2016. His party cannot be punished at the ballot box. The interesting thing is that they know this is unpopular. Somehow they've convinced themselves that this is a long-term winner for them, or this kind of adds to the president's legacy or something like that. The idea that the electorate is going to forget about this is pretty unlikely. We've had lots of little kind of nibbling around the edges fights about executive the power of the presidency and stuff like that. I think this is going to eventually go all the way to the Supreme Court, and I think you'll have a really tough time defending this as not being a total violation of the traditional checks and balances and powers authorized to the president to Congress.
Their argument, of course, and we're kind of blending the good and the bad here, but as we branch over to the bad one, the argument, Jim, of course, from the White House, they're saying, oh, we're not tearing up the Constitution. You've had presidents take executive action on immigration in the past. It kind of goes to their vague, well, we haven't issued as many executive orders as some presidents, as if all executive orders are equal.
Yeah, as if the numbers are all the same. You know, Mark Krikorian went and did the numbers. On the one they cite from George H.W. Bush, affected about 44,000 people. This one is 4 to 5 million. The other thing is, you know, well, no one objected to those. Well, because they weren't controversial. There was broad bipartisan consensus in Congress about that. The reason nobody complained about that is that there wasn't any particular good reason to complain about those particular executive orders. With this one, there are a lot of good reasons to complain. And in those cases, it's not like Congress had, you know, specifically passed legislation saying, don't do this. Now, in this case, Congress has had a similar legislation in front of it, and it has refused to pass it because they don't think it's a good idea. And for a long time, you know, this country was built, you know, the founders set up the system so that it would be kind of difficult to ram something through. The fact that the votes aren't there for this. And Obama's basically saying, I don't care. I want this. I'm going to make this happen regardless of what the Constitution says. And he himself specifically said the Constitution did not permit him to do this back in 2011. So he's basically admitting that he's breaking the Constitution, which should make this a kind of easy slam dunk case eventually before the Supreme Court, which means it'll go 5-4.
Well, at best. Here's what the president said yesterday in his, as you put it, casual dress for a casual breaking of the Constitution. Here's what the president said about why he's doing this.
Everybody agrees that our immigration system is broken. Unfortunately, Washington has allowed the problem to fester for too long. And so what I'm going to be laying out is the things that I can do with my lawful authority as president to make the system work better, even as I continue to work with Congress and encourage them to get a bipartisan, comprehensive bill that can solve the entire problem.
Jim, we must have missed it in Article 2 that if the president runs out of patience, he doesn't have to wait for Congress anymore.
When he says everyone agrees the system is broken, that does not mean that everyone agrees that this is the proper solution. The idea that, you know, that this is, you know, well, I see a problem and I see a solution and I'm going to do it and I don't care what Congress thinks. This is what dictatorships are made of. In the previous martini, I kind of laid out how this is kind of, you know, straight up violation of the Constitution. You can't help but get this nagging sense that Obama wants to trigger an impeachment fight. And you're hearing this from folks on our side, not regularly. It's, I think everyone kind of recognizes that, look, you need 67 votes to impeach the president, and you're just never going to get that. You know, we have 54 Republican seats. In the end, the lesson of the Clinton impeachment was that Democrats will rally around their guy no matter what. Obama could go on a chainsaw massacre, and he would still have at least 30, probably 34 Democrats that would say, no, no, no. Everyone who was a victim of that chainsaw massacre was expelling carbon emissions. But this was really just an environmental policy or something like that. So we have a guy who knows he's not going to get impeached, and he knows that if there was an attempted impeachment of him, it would rile up his base, it would get Democrats fired up and angry, it would be exactly what his party needs. So Republicans are kind of in a tough spot here. Now, you will see, I think, a much necessary effort to not fund this, and there are various folks in the corner who are fighting through the right way to do this. I think one of the easiest ways is to just keep sending appropriations bills one at a time until you get to the Department of Homeland Security, the ones that have authorization for this, and then you don't, because then it's not a government shutdown. Then it's just the issue for those particular departments. And then the second thing is, you know, we have a good opportunity here to just dump this on Hillary and say, all right, Hillary, what do you think? What do Democrats think? What do unions think? What do African-Americans think about all this? And then two other aspects, and I realize I've listed all the bad things for the good martini, the good things for the bad martini, but this is a muddy issue here. Hugh Hewitt is making a really fascinating point about the legal liability of employers who hire these workers. They're not legal workers, right? They're not U.S. citizens. They just have basically a permission slip from the president that is of dubious legal authority. So one, are you violating the law or not? You know, does this hold up in court when you say, well, the president said it was okay if the Congress did not, and you can't really point to anything in the actual law that says it's okay to employ these people? Two, are you liable for what happens if these illegal immigrants do something, you know, off the clock? They say, well, we were in the country because this guy hired us. And then the third thing, which is kind of an interesting question, I'll be writing about this up on Campaign Spot momentarily after we finish this podcast, Greg. So why do people hire illegal immigrants?
Because they don't have to pay them very much.
Right, they don't have to pay them very much. They're never going to go to the cops and complain about an unsafe workplace, never file workman's compensation, never complain about overtime or unpaid overtime, things like that. If you give them this quasi-legal status in which they're no longer afraid of deportation and they don't mind going to the cops, so they don't mind going to some authority to complain about these things, do you still want to hire them? Maybe not. The irony is this order may end up taking four or five million illegal immigrants and making them effectively unemployable at their old employers. This may end up hurting them, the very people who Obama says it's going to help.
All right, let's move off of immigration, Jim, and let's move to the 2016 campaign. Yes, we're still in November 2014, but America is clamoring for new leadership. We just heard it from Ron Fournier earlier in the week. This president has broken the trust of the American people, and it's obvious what the American people want is a one-term senator from Virginia who only got elected because the incumbent said something incredibly stupid on the campaign trail, and the Washington Post wouldn't let it go. Jim Webb, possibly running for president. He's got an exploratory committee.
I have decided to launch an exploratory committee to examine whether I should run for president in 2016. I made this decision after reflecting on numerous political commentaries and listening to many knowledgeable people. I look forward to listening and talking with more people in the coming months as I decide whether or not to run.
Now, Webb does have quite a bit more in public service. He was Secretary of the Navy under Reagan, spent time in the Marine Corps, and certainly served this country, but his time in Washington as a senator, Jim, was pretty awkward. Even he pretty much admitted that he didn't belong in the Senate, so I'm not sure how he would be the one to bridge any gaps and why he would have any base of support in the party right now.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought was, here's a guy who got bored with being in the Senate really quickly, and it kind of reminds me of somebody else who got bored of quickly decided to run for president, another Democrat who ran against Bush. So, Jim Webb, we've seen this movie. We just saw it ends. We don't like it. I posted this morning, and there's already been a kind of a positive reaction from some corners of the conservative world, in that Jim Webb was perceived to be, if not, not a conservative. He likes to point to the fact that he was Reagan's Navy Secretary. Yes, he was in the job for barely a year, and by the end of it, Reagan said, I don't think the Navy's going to miss him very much. he was kind of a pain in the tuchus. He's kind of an irritable guy. He's an ornery guy. His 2006 campaign was, he was mad about the Iraq war. His son was serving there, and he thought it was a bad war, so he ran for Senate. And then once that war started dying down, you really didn't hear as much from Jim Webb anymore. He was not, you know, he took on some kind of unpopular issues like prison reform and stuff like that. He's not the worst Democrat to ever live. And he's very proud of his Scotch-Irish heritage and his military background. And there's, as you saw in that statement, an appreciation for Appalachia and the Southern and kind of Midwestern working-class white Jacksonian tradition in American politics. And somewhere on some conservatives, you know, a little, the needle just moved. We kind of like that kind of talk. The challenge is, it just seems temperamentally just completely at odds with what you need in a president. Kind of short-tempered. I think, it, you know, he kind of is a... an impatient fellow and a guy who found the Senate to be absolutely unbearable and really just the entire process of politics frustratingly unbearable. It's kind of interesting he's jumping back into the fray and wants to do this. My suspicion is he will leave the field early, partially out of a lack of funds, partially out of, you know, running into the Clinton steamroller, but partially out of the fact he just seems like a guy who's fundamentally, his heart isn't into politics, which is, you know, is very strange to see a guy like that voluntarily signing on to run for president.
Jim, you mentioned what he ran on. Do you remember one time in 6 years where he stood athwart the Democratic leadership? Certainly didn't it when Obama got there. Stimulus, Obamacare, he was on board. He hemmed and hawed a few times, but I don't remember him really.
Yeah, I mean, he allegedly was telling Obama that he thought Obamacare was going to be a disaster. They voted for it in the end. I mean, you know, he's a loyal foot soldier, but I think it's safe to say he's kind of temperamentally not a loyal foot soldier. But the voting record certainly didn't point to him being this, you know, wild rebel maverick who was a genuine independent or anything like that.
Jim Webb has kicked it off. That should ratchet up the excitement level to about 5 or 6. And who can be
out of 100, right?
Exactly.
Back in 2007, this is before I returned from Turkey, Tom Vilsack, remember him, Mr. Excitement?
Yes.
Announced he was running for president.
Woo-hoo!
And I had gotten National Review to begin what was then the Hillary spot in January 2007. I returned in March 2007. Vilsack was out by the before I got back. His entire campaign lasted, I believe, 30 days. So you know, joke's on me, haha. I didn't get back in time to cover the Tom Vilsack presidential campaign. But that was started exceptionally early and ended exceptionally early. And it's not unthinkable the same fate will befall Jim Webb.
Your move, Bernie Sanders.
Also, notice the youth movement continues. Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, maybe Jerry Brown in there. You
yes.
know, as John Bernard said, that stage is going to look like the movie Cocoon.
Can't wait. Jim.
Can't wait.
I'm out tomorrow, but you'll be here. I'll talk to you on Monday.
I'll see you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And tune in on Friday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.